welcome to the Community Mennonite Church Podcast. This week's sermon is brought to us by Pastor Dana Olson Getty.
Please pray with me. Lord, open my lips that my mouth may proclaim your praise, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. In the Eastern Orthodox Church, Mary is known as the Theotokos. It's a Greek word that literally means the God-bearer, the one who is pregnant with the life of God. The one who bears the life of God in her own body into the world. The Theotokos is the one who says yes. In an act of the most intimate and life-changing hospitality, she welcomes God into her life and into her own body. And when we read Luke, we see that Mary, the Theotokos, is the model disciple. She's the one person in this story of Jesus' birth and life who most fully and wholly says yes to God. It's hard to imagine a more unlikely Theotokos than Mary. Mary is a nobody from nowhere. Did you notice when we read the introduction from Luke about Mary that Luke doesn't even tell us who Mary's family is? So women in Mary's time and place were almost always identified by their family, usually by their father or their husband, or maybe both. Because husbands and fathers, they were the heads of the household, and their status in the community determined the status, the social and economic status of their daughters or their wives. But Mary, she's engaged, but she's not married. And so she's not yet a member of the household of Joseph. She's betrothed. She's likely between the ages of 12 and 14. At this time and place, young girls were usually married by the time they reached puberty. So she's somewhere in that range, just barely old enough to get pregnant. And she must have had parents, but Luke is conspicuously silent about her family of birth. And that silence makes me wonder about them. I wonder if Mary was an orphan, or maybe if some other catastrophe had befallen her family, leaving her unmoored, unspoken for, and unprotected in the network of extended family relationships in her community. What we do know about Mary is that she's from Nazareth. This is a little village. At this time, it was about 400 people. In Galilee, which is a border region where people of different ethnicities lived side by side with Jews. And Nazareth is just a few miles from Sepphoris, which was one of the urban centers that the Romans developed. It was a center of military defense, of commerce, of government. And living near Sepphoris would mean that Mary and her fellow villagers would regularly encounter Roman soldiers. And these soldiers, no doubt, behaved at times in the terrifying, ruthless, and entitled ways that occupying soldiers often behave. Nazareth was not a safe place to be a young woman. And Mary was poor, really poor. Her people were subsistence farmers. And so they did hard physical labor. It would have been enough most of the time for a family to survive, but you weren't going to get wealthy on it. But to make things more difficult, the people in towns like Nazareth were being taxed at nearly impossible levels. And so what would have been a life of subsistence, of enough, became a life of crushing poverty, hunger, constant struggle, and the ever-present threat of violence. So we have Mary, She's incredibly young. She has no family or no husband to speak to, for her. She's poor, illiterate, a girl child in a world that is unkind to girls. She's from a poverty-stricken village, and she lives next door to a military base that's known for its brutality and exploitation. It is hard for me to imagine anyone more breathtakingly vulnerable than Mary. When I think of her, I visualize her life being held by one fragile thread. And then the angel Gabriel appears and announces that in addition, Mary, to being a nobody girl from nowhere with no family to speak for you, you will become miraculously pregnant. And Mary says, yes, let it be. At the very least, this yes of Mary's to this baby places Mary's marriage to Joseph in jeopardy. And without a husband, without a family to claim her and her child, without resources or skills that she could use to support herself, and in a village frequented by occupying troops, what would become of Mary? Now, if I were Mary's Auntie Elizabeth, I would want to take her round brown cheeks in my hands and look deep into her big black eyes and say, no, child, no, you cannot do this. Having a child will make your already difficult life much more difficult and precarious. Having this child could kill you, not just because of the dangers of childbirth. Tell God to find somebody else, somebody who has a little education, somebody from a nice middle-class home with enough to eat, with a husband who will claim her and her child. Leave this Theotokos to somebody else whose life is more secure, more established, more well-connected. It's good that it wasn't me there. It was Elizabeth. And Elizabeth said something else to Mary. Now, Elizabeth's life was much more secure and established and safe. Yes, she lived under the Roman occupation, but she was much older. She was married to a man who was well-respected. She lived in a part, in a more central region of the country. And so she had more security, but she also had experienced lifelong humiliation and grief. And I wonder if that is not why she was able to see in this invitation that Mary had accepted, the Spirit of God at work. Elizabeth knows from experience what it is to hope in hopeless circumstances. She can see this invitation for what it is. It's a moment of new possibility. It's a possibility for Mary and also for their people, what they have been waiting for, an opening for life to take root in barren ground. And so Elizabeth doesn't say, no, child, no. She says, blessed are you. She prophesies, she affirms. This word, blessing, it most literally means an affirmation of God's gift of life. It's invoking the power of fertility, of creation, ripening, fruit-bearing, childbearing in all realms of life. She's saying, full of the life of God are you. And as she says this, the child in her own belly leaps in her womb. Elizabeth declares to Mary and to the world that this unexpected child who is conceived by a vulnerable girl is not an additional burden in an already burdened life, but a gift from God. She claims that this tiny spark of life in Mary's belly, so small and new that no one but Mary can even tell that it's there, that this changes everything, not only for Mary, but for the people of God. It's a fundamental shift in the history of the people of God. And Elizabeth prophesies. And Mary, this nobody girl from nowhere, this illiterate peasant girl who's still an early teen, she replies with a prophetic psalm of her own. And if Mary is an unlikely Theotokos, she is an even more unlikely prophet. But Mary, despite all her vulnerability and poverty, she's grown up in a world that was rich in abundance of stories and poetry, stories about the God who is with the vulnerable, who acts on behalf of those who have no other recourse, who have no other hope, who have no advocate but God. Mary knows these stories, and you can hear them in her poem. She knows the story of Sarah and the promised baby boy Isaac, whose late in life conception filled Sarah with laughter. And Mary knows the stories and song of Miriam, who danced and sang a victory song on the far shore of the Red Sea after God led her people out of 400 years of misery as slaves in Egypt. And Mary knows the song of Hannah, especially of Hannah, whose cries of humiliation and grief God heard. God gave Hannah a child, and that child grew up to become a priest who anointed the king who saved their people from the Philistines. Mary knows these stories of the women from Israel's history who, unlikely as they may have been, said yes when God called, who embraced the invitation to let their lives, their own stories, be woven into the story of God's people. God sees, God remembers, God acts in the life of Mary, and Mary responds. She remembers and sees as well. She recognizes this strange, dangerous moment for what it is. It's an opportunity to let the life of God take deep root in her life, to welcome this story of God's long faithfulness as it flows right through the middle of her life. She sees that bearing this child and speaking this word of prophecy, explaining, speaking the words of what is occurring in her life, this is an opportunity for the ancient promised blessing of restoration and liberation, for this life of God to be born in her, a nobody girl from nowhere. So Mary sings this song that we heard this morning, that we sang, the Magnificat. And it's made up of the stuff, the stories, the experiences of Mary's own life, as well as the stories of these women who went before her. You can hear in it her own story, her vulnerability, her desperate need for refuge and provision, for someone to speak and act on her behalf. God has looked with favor on the lowliness of his servant, she sings. And that word lowly, it means not just humble, but it means someone who suffers humiliation. It's used to describe women like Elizabeth, whose life was marked for years by the shame of failing to bear a son in a culture that valued bearing sons above all else. And it's a word that would describe people like the residents of Nazareth, people who suffer exploitation and oppression at the hands of the more powerful. It's also used in the Bible to name the anguish of women who have been sexually assaulted. God is saying that God sees the violated, the unprotected, the crushed, and Mary declares that it is so. Mary sings for those whose lives seem to be fruitless and wasted, for those whose safety and children and future have been stolen away from them to finance the luxuries and safety of the powerful. She sings for those whose bodies have been violated by a predator's insatiable desires. Mary sings a song of salvation, of God's presence with God's people. And it's a song that's big enough to include not only the revolution of her heart, of her spirit, but the revolution of the political, economic, and social realities that she and her people live with every day. God's salvation, she says, is overturning all of these systems and structures that destroy human flourishing, that rise up in opposition to blessing. God's salvation is coming to us in the form of a vulnerable child born to a vulnerable girl who sings a dangerous and revolutionary song. So I learned that some scholars think that this song, the Magnificat, may have been prayed by and handed down to Luke, who wrote it down, by a community of poor ones, of Christians, who found their identity and freedom, especially in Mary's tradition, in Mary's God, despite having been born into poverty and slavery. And whether or not this song came to us through that particular community, if there was such a community, Luke gives us a hint, a pretty big hint, that it's meant for all of us as well. This story that Luke tells keeps opening up over and over again like windows to say, this story is not just about what happened to these people in this time, but to all of us who follow in their footsteps. Blessed are you among women, Elizabeth greets Mary. But then, just as Mary's Magnificat expands from focusing on her own life to this big, long, huge story of God's presence in the life of her people, so do Elizabeth's words of blessing open up and expand as well. Blessed is she who believed, Elizabeth said. Blessed are the ones who believe. That's an invitation to us. That's an invitation not just to Mary, but to any of us who are willing to join in this song of the Magnificat, to say yes to God's invitation of welcoming new life into the most vulnerable places of our lives, of singing God's song of liberation for those who have no other recourse. She who believes, that's our moment to hear the voice of God. That's our invitation to step into this river of God's story, to allow our lives to be caught up in its flow. That's our invitation to take our place in this long line of prophets and mothers, to welcome into our own lives the life of God, to affirm, like Elizabeth, the life of God we see in another. We, my brothers and sisters, are invited to hear, to sing this song in our own time and place. We're invited to listen for and join in the song of Mary, whose unlikely hope that God sees and remembers and acts for the salvation of those who wait in hope was met by the revolutionary love of God.
Thank you for listening to the Community Mennonite Church podcast. Our theme music is a setting of John Wesley's text, Jesus, I Believe You're Near, composed by Matt Carlson. Jeremy Nafziger arranged it for strings. To learn more about our congregation or to plan a visit, please check out our website at cmcva.org.